All right, good evening. Welcome everyone to Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Elizabeth and I am an alcoholic. Yes. Housekeeping. We will only be recording and publishing the audio portion of this meeting. You can also sign up for email on our website at simpleactions.net. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. Anyone can use the chat function to send their phone numbers to newcomers privately. Do we have any newcomers tonight?
Checking. Hi, I'm Alex. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Alex. Welcome. We're glad you're here. And anybody else?
My name is Amy. I'm an alcoholic. I am new to this meeting, but just past my 30 days. So.
Welcome, Amy. And then Sydney S., you're a newcomer as well. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Bobby, alcoholic. First time here.
Welcome. Glad you're here.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Is that everybody? I think so. Okay. Jason is going to read the preamble for us.
Jason, alcoholic. Once he put the preamble up. All right. The A preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. Thanks for letting me read.
Thanks for reading. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 10. Please welcome our panel. We have Ian and Danielle. I will read the first paragraph on page 84, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Step 10, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Page 84. This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately, and we make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. And Danielle is going to take the lead for us tonight. Danielle?
All right. Hi, everyone. I'm Danielle, and I am definitely an alcoholic. I love coming to this meeting and I love speaking with Ian. And this is actually how we came together speaking.
Why are you off camera?
I don't know. Hold on. I didn't realize.
There you go.
Oh, there you go. So this is how we got to come together. We were speaking on step 10 and 11 in a conference and we studied it and something worked because we're still here now. Now we're living together and we're getting married in August. So it's a really special experience when I get to speak with Ian. So we're at step 10. Now, that means we've done a lot of work. I'll do a quick run through just so that for the newcomers and stuff, just so that you have an idea of how we got here. And step one, right, is where we spend a good amount of time in the big book. And we start to really understand and learn about what's wrong with us. What is an alcoholic? What does it mean, right, to be powerless? Like, that was something I heard all the time. I didn't understand, right? Well, it means that it's not if I'm going to pick up, it's when I'm going to pick up. And I have lost the power, choice, and control as to when that's going to happen. So I'm pretty much doomed. I'm going to pick up, and to drink is to die. So I really have no other choice but to, right, gain access to this power, which we learn about in step two, right? Because this power, which I call God, right, is the only thing that is capable of returning me to sanity. And what sanity looks like is different for everybody. I mean, for me, I'm still a little crazy, but, you know, I'll take this crazy any day over what my other crazy used to look like, which was, you know, jails, institutions, 15 rehabs, and a whole lot of trouble. It was not a pretty sight. So I keep going, and I make this decision in the third step where I turn my will and my life over to the care of God. Well, what does that really mean? That means that I have to stop playing God. I didn't even know I was playing God, right? I come into the rooms, they're like, you're playing God. So what does that even mean? You know, well, it means that I have to step out of the way and let God be my director. He's my employer. I work for him, right? And when I step out of the way and let him lead the show, things just tend to go a little bit smoother than when I'm trying to manage and control everything in my life and everyone else's. So I continue to do this inventory. I share my inventory with someone else. I get down to the causes and conditions. I look at the things that are blocking me off from access to this power. And then I go to God with this new awareness in step 6 and 7. And that's where God starts to empower me. After I do that, I go out into the world and I demonstrate my willingness to change by making amends and taking responsibility for my harms that I did while I was using, and start to clean up my past. So by this time, right, we end off the ninth step with the ninth step promises. And there are these really, really amazing promises. And that's what we read right before the paragraph that we just read, which was this thought. So this thought is actually the ninth step promises, right? That if I do all of this work, then the byproduct is I get to be happy, joyous, and free. And they just listed a ton of wonderful things that will happen. And I don't even have to work for them, right? They just happen because I'm living this way of life, letting God be my director, letting him run the show, being of service to other people, and getting out of my own way for the first time in my life. So that's the thought that brings us to step 10. And that suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. Well, inventory is something that I thought that I would do once and then push it to the side. You know, there are two frames of thought. There's Dr. Bob, right? And Dr. Bob was from the mentality that really thought that we continuously do inventory. It's not like we go through the steps once, we have this experience, we live in 10, 11, and 12. That didn't work for me. I tried and I failed miserably. I ended up absolutely miserable. And then, Bill, that was the way that he worked his program, and all the people that followed him, they really were under the impression that you only really had to do the steps once 1 to 12, and then you could live in 10, 11, and 12. So now in 10, 11, and 10, we're looking at how we're going to basically try to keep this experience that we've just reached, right? So in 1 through 9, we have literally done all this inventory. We've done all this work. We've looked at ourselves. We've gone to God, and we've gone out into the world and made amends. And this is where, like, the magic happens, right? Where the sparks happen, where I've entered the world of the spirit, right? And that, what that means is I need to keep it now. Well, how do I keep it? Well, I need to maintain and grow, right, my connection with God. And step 10 is the beginning of how I do that. So I have to continue to do inventory, right, as things come up. So it says, take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. Well, I'm constantly going to be making new mistakes, especially after I first get sober. Are you kidding me? I had no idea how to work this program. I had no idea how to live life and spiritual principles and all this big book stuff. And I'm like treading water, just trying not to pick up a drink, right? But the truth is that by this time, it's the magic has happened. I have accessed the power, and I just need to keep current on these things like inventory, setting right new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living. What way of living? This way of living, right? Helping others, cleaning house, living along spiritual lines, right? Easy, very easy to say, but am I doing it, right? Look at my family. Look at my son, ask him, am I like screaming at him every 5 minutes? And then going on to meetings and claiming that things are wonderful. You know, I have a responsibility today as a member of AA to live this program. Not only to myself, but to everybody around me. It's just not worth it. I will end up miserable in no time if I don't do it. So, but when I do, right, it says we have entered the world of the spirit. Now, what is the world of the spirit, right? I mean, you could look at this in so many different ways. I mean, our book talks about it all the time, like we're rocketed into. Well, what does that mean? That means that, like, I used to think God was up here in the clouds. I used to think God was out there. He's up in heaven, you know, whatever, chilling. And in reality, what I learned after going through this process is that he's deep down within. He's deep down within me. There is a power that I have access to. If I can just turn within, I can gain access to it. And that is what keeps me sane. That is what keeps me, a drink is like the farthest thing from my mind after I gain access to this. But now it's what keeps me sane. It's what keeps me, you know, sane amongst the crazy, which is called life. Because nobody, right, can, like, life is hard. It's not supposed to be easy. So the world of the spirit is this internal peace, this serenity, this. It's so much more than happy, joyous, and free. It's contentment, right? That I get even when things around me aren't going well, even when there is chaos and drama and life on life's terms. Our next function is to grow. People sometimes say these are maintenance steps. These are growth steps. I need to continuously be growing my relationship with my higher power, right? So growing and understanding of what? Understanding of what God's will is for me and effectiveness, how to carry God's will and his vision into my life, how to live it, right? How to improve my effectiveness in carrying this message, right? How to improve my effectiveness of living this message, right? Because it is not as easy as, oh, I'm good. I went through the steps, right? I got this now. No, I mean, this is life. This is tough. This is the real world. And I'm going to make mistakes. But as long as I keep growing with my higher power, then he keeps me safe and protected. So it says that this isn't an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. Continue, right? And they're going to pound this home. Continue, continue, continue to watch. We have to watch for self-centeredness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Well, why are we watching for those things? Well, if you scroll back to the fourth step, these are the different ways that I play God, right? The fear is that's the nature, right, of me acting out in my alcoholism, right? That's when I am trying to run the show, when I'm trying to control, I become dishonest, I become manipulative, I become angry, right? Why? Because I'm a big baby and I'm not getting what I want. But the thing is I'm human. So when these crop up, not if they crop up, when they crop up, what do? I don't rely. It says over and over again in the big book that we don't rely on human resources because they don't work. So I have to cut out the middleman and I got to go to the source, right? So I turn to God first. We ask God at once to remove them. That's the first thing that I do, right? After I see that these things have cropped up, I go to God. Now, this is not something I was taught to do in most of my life. Most of my life, I was thinking about me. I got to figure this out, this thing called life, right? I'm angry. The last thing I'm thinking about is going to God, right? 33 years. The last thing I'm thinking about is going to God. So now I have to practice this discipline. It doesn't come naturally. So for a long time after I first got sober, I messed up on this and I didn't work an effective 10th step. And what ended up happening was that access to power that kept me sane was out the window in a year. And I was batshit in no time. And I highly do not recommend this. But unfortunately, you know, that's part of this process where I had to learn the hard way because that's just my character, right? So, you know, it's really important today that I am much more diligent about the 10th step. I watch. I'm walking hand in hand with God through my entire day. I'm constantly turning. And the more that I practice this discipline, the easier it gets. It just becomes second nature, right? So then what do? We discuss it with someone immediately, right? We take account. We have somebody we can be accountable to, right? I don't push things under the rug, or I try not to, right? To the best of my ability. And I try to take responsibility for any of this stuff as it comes up. I make amends quickly if I've harmed anyone, because I still do harm people. And I probably will to the end of my days, right? Because that's what humans do. We don't mean to hurt each other. But sometimes, you know, I mouth off too quickly without thinking. There's no pause that day. And all of a sudden, I've hurt like the people that I love the most. So, and then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. And why is that? That's because that is the quickest way to get out of my self-centeredness. Because I'll sit here and I'll be like thinking about it, like, oh, I'm so angry. And what's the best way to stop thinking about myself? It's to help someone else. So that's what I do. And then it says love and tolerance of others is our code. And this is the code that I try to live by, right? That I try to love everybody. I don't have to like everyone, but I love everybody because we're all one, because we're all connected. Because if I don't like you, I'm actually blocking myself off from God, because God is within you and God is within me, right? And tolerance, right? They talk about real tolerance in the big book. Page 25, is that right? You can. Real tolerance, right? And real tolerance is where, you know, I'm actually living this. I'm believing it. I'm not just poo-pooing people, right? I'm embracing life at a different level. And I'm embracing other people. And it's when other people make mistakes, it's okay, because guess what? I do too. And that's what the human experience is all about. And when I live according to that code, my life becomes beautiful. And I think I spoke long enough, so I'll turn it over to you, Ian.
Thanks, Danielle. Ian?
Wow, that was pretty good.
That's fire.
You know what? I learned something too. How many rehabs? Maybe I ought to reconsider the decision.
15.
I gotta go back and look at my decision here. Oh, baby. Anyhow, thank you. And it was really powerful. Not a lot to add. I mean, I just kind of keep this, to me, this paragraph that Danielle just spoke on and that was read earlier, those are the disciplines for this step. And, you know, what's important for me is not so much today the mechanics of it or the knowledge of it, but it's the working experiential part of it. And if I don't have if I've dragged my feet in the ninth step and I'm not really solid in my 11th step, I'm really going to have a very ineffective 10th step. And it's really important that I always remember the sandwiching of those things, because, you know, what's a 10th step really about? It's about my relationship with you. When we get to the 11th step next week, whoever's going to speak on it, that's the internal relationship. And the 10th step's my external relationship. And, you know, not that I'm going to share on 11, but I'm just going to say something that's really important for me in this process here, is that, you know, the 11th step gives us three disciplines upon when we retire at night, when we wake up, and throughout the day. And they're strategic on why they do that, because it's important when we retire at night so that it can rest. And I'll show you where this really ties into this. You know, and really what I'm looking for there is a whole bunch of stuff. But really the bottom line is, am I playing God? Yes or no? And when I wake up in the morning, I pray not to play God. And then throughout the day, it says, when agitated or doubtful, we pause. This is the pause. The pause is right here. This paragraph is the pause, the disciplines, you know, make, ask, discuss. I'm sorry. I watch. I used to know this by heart. I used to say it all the time. I watch, ask, make, discuss, turn. Five disciplines. They're about the pause. Because why would I be agitated or doubtful? Because I'm probably in some fear or resentment. You know, I'm probably playing God. And then there's tools to do it. And the 10th step. Really, it's so important to have a really strong foundation coming into here, because if I'm living life, and Danielle said something that's really, which I wholeheartedly believe, and, you know, because my lineage dates back through Dr. Bob, and my lineage, my great-grandsponsor, my sponsor, and stuff, you know, we're about the continuation, the cyclical. Don Coya says about the four seasons, you know, like the season doesn't stop at fall and then winter, and we go to spring, summer, and we're back to fall and winter, and they're constantly evolving, and so's my relationship with God. And in order to keep the healthy relationship, to keep the unity, the inner peace, I have to evolve with this too, and I have to be open to change. And, you know, when I look at some of the powerful words in here, in this paragraph, you know, that what's a mistake, you know? Well, I could look at a lot of things for the mistake. For me, the mistake is that I start playing God again. Some people call it taking their will back, but I'm not sure what about the will you decided to give up in the third step you really want back if your life was successful on self-will, and you would never have changed. So I just look at it that I renege on my decision and start playing God again. You know, and we take this pause into our life and process it so I can live in the day, throughout the day with you. Because what happens if I don't put this to practice? you know, really effective. Well, the first thing that's going to happen is I'm going to erode my relationship with God, because I'm going to start having resentments and expectations and fears. And the truth is that how long can I stay in that till the devilments start ripening up and blooming in my life, and they start showing up? And now, and there's no coincidence why the first bedevilment's having trouble in personal relationships. That's what this is about, Rady. That's what all this is about. I have trouble with you when I need you to play a role in my life for me to be okay. AKA, I'm playing God. And so if I'm not careful, it's very sneaky and subtle. And it shows up in a lot of different ways. And Danielle knows, involved in a workshop that I'm running right now. And we look at these other alternatives in our life that come out and sneak behind us and make us think that we're really living spiritually when maybe we're not living as spiritually as we think we are. And the two words that she ended with, love and tolerance. Well, there's no coincidence that tolerance is in our book 16 times in the first 164 pages and love 21 times. They're powerful words. They're byproducts of this inner peace. See, I can't have tolerance with you if I don't have inner peace with me and God. It's impossible. And that's what, and the book's clear. My very life depends on me living by this code, love and tolerance. I don't have to like you, but I need to love you. I need to have tolerance. And what's tolerance look like? That's when your opinions or behaviors go against what I believe or I do, and I'm okay with it. And I'm okay just being okay, because it's not my job to run your life. And so much of my life, I had to interject in other people's lives. I had to show up where I wasn't welcome, because I didn't have love and tolerance. And today, it's probably my sponsor, Ron, he hammered that home. He made me put post-its all over the place, at work, in my car, anywhere I had, in my golf bag, you know, of little post-its that said, love and tolerance, yes or no. And really, that's the bottom line, because either I'm in surrender or I'm in resistance. So if I'm in love and tolerance, I'm in surrender, I'm in gratitude. And if I'm not, I'm in resistance, I'm in fear, I'm in resentment. I'm basically running the show. And so, you know, if there's anything for me in this book that's so important, it's this paragraph. And it leads us, and I'll close, you know, don't think, or at least, okay, let me revert that back. For me, just because I got through amends, I don't have the ability personally, and my experience has proven it, to have a true experience to stay in this love and tolerance by only living in 10, 11, and 12. And clearly Bill didn't either, because he wrote a whole papers on emotional sobriety. And he took LSD and other stuff to deal with his depression and anxiety. And I used to swear by that philosophy. And basically what I had was an opinion without an experience. I was in contempt, because that's what I was told, until I changed and started living in a different way. And, you know, you can use this stuff too. If things start coming up in your life multiple times, don't be afraid to bring it, if you want to change, that is. Like, you may not want to have an experience to change, but if you do, and you're talking to your sponsor or somebody with stuff that keeps cropping up, then maybe it needs to go back to 6 and 7. Maybe you need to look at the behaviors that are objectionable and go back to God with them in 7, if you're willing to change. And you'll see that your 10 steps become less and less over time, the more I go back into 6 and 7 with the stuff that crops up. So I'll end with that.
Thanks, Ian. Okay, we're going to go on to our next reading, which is also on page 84. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, for by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it. Neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. Danielle.
Hi, Danielle, still alcoholic. So the 10-step promises are, oh my gosh, so dear to my heart. And that's what these are, right? Where the 9-step promises, some come slowly, some come quickly, you know, they materialize, you know, usually they say after you're halfway done with your amends, but these promises are where I felt different, you know, and for this alcoholic, right, I needed to feel something. It wasn't enough to read the big book and write some stuff on some paper, go through it with someone else. You know, I needed to feel power, right? Lack of power, that's our dilemma. I could, you know, any of us could say that, but do you feel power today? Like, I feel it. I mean, it is like when that channel is opened, right? And God floods in. And I've had experiences and I have had, you know, like the educational variety. And today, you know, it doesn't stop. When I live these principles, I get to feel this presence. I get to develop and continue to grow my relationship with this power that I call God, right? Each and every day. And when I do this, this is how I get to live, right? It's beautiful. I mean, right? Because I was always a fighter. Forget about, oh my gosh, let me tell you, I love the blame game. I would blame everybody in the room. Everyone else was worse than me. Yep. No, you're a bigger alcoholic. You're this, you're that. I loved it because it was my way out, right? It was my way out. And now they're saying, right, we have ceased fighting. Why? Because I don't have to fight anymore. Why? Because it doesn't really matter anymore. So not only have I ceased fighting anyone, also anything. And I had a really rough experience about 8 months ago. I moved out and I kind of ended things with my family. And I was having PTSD and it was really not a pretty sight. I mean, and that's the thing about sobriety, you know, like I don't have to drink, but it's more than that, you know, like these bumps in the road are what teach me how to turn to God, how to grow closer to God, how to use God in tough times. Because if everything was all good, then I would eventually go back to my old ways. So, you know, these things that come up in life are tools that I can either look at as, you know, these temporary things that encourage me and push me, this pain that pushes me towards God, right? And to utilize these tools that we learn in this program. And when I was experiencing, you know, horrendous PTSD,
I'm praying and I'm doing this program and Ian's watching me and I'm like convulsing because I'm like shaking and I can't stop and it's physical. So I don't know what to do. And I'm like, God, where are you? Where are you? And I'm sitting there and I felt like my world was coming down on me and I felt hopeless all over again in sobriety. But I just kept going. I didn't have any other choice, right? But to just keep going, to keep doing the things that worked in the past, to keep showing up, to keep looking at the things that the objectionable behaviors, to keep praying, meditating, talking to people, trying to get clear and see what God wanted me to learn here. And what ended up happening was I had a moment. And when I say a moment, you know, it's an experience for me today when everything just clicks, right? It's not my doing. It's all the work and all of the experience just comes together and it just makes sense. And in that one moment, literally this line from the big book came to me where I said, I am done fighting. I'm done fighting everyone and everything. And that one little line, right, changed my entire perspective. And what happened at that moment was it was God's grace coming in. And it was like it clicked and I knew what I had to do. I was done fighting everyone and everything. I was done fighting the PTSD. I was done fighting my family that were trying to like do crazy stuff, you know, and I just stopped. Now, could I do this on my own? Absolutely not. But when I, right, have this access to power, that's when I'm able to live in these promises. I can stop fighting everything and everyone, especially alcohol. That came first. And I remember when it was my first Thanksgiving and I felt that I'm there watching everybody drink around me. And I'm for the first time in my life, not pissed that everyone else is getting loaded. I almost felt sorry for them. And that's when I realized, oh my gosh, I'm living what they talk about in the big book. It's happening. I'm having an experience. And when your eyes are open to that, and then you see it happen in your life, there is no denying that God is working in and out of this whole process, this experience, the steps, everything, you know? And then as you continue to live this and have new experiences, you just continue to have your eyes open even more and more to that presence of God throughout everything and everyone that you encounter. So it says, for this time, sanity comes back. Alcohol, it's not even about alcohol. I want to be sane. I have some like really sick people around me. I got a sick family. I got a sick ex-husband. I got sick people. Everybody's sick. Everybody makes mistakes. You know what? It's okay. But I want to be sane. And I'm not capable of staying in that place of sanity amongst the craziness that is my life without God. So this, once again, is a testament to what God can do for me. It restores me. The second step comes true in this step. So it says we seldom are interested in liquor, right? And that's what happened in that Thanksgiving when I see everybody getting loaded. And I used to be so mad when I couldn't drink and I had to watch them. But that's what happened. I wasn't interested in it anymore. And I almost felt compassion for my family who was getting loaded because they didn't know, right? They were just, you know, doing the same old thing they always did because that's what our family did. But it says, if tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. And earlier on in the book, we hear about how we put our hand on the hot flame, right? Over and over again. We keep going back. We keep picking up that drink. We keep doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. Hell, I even knew what was going to happen. I still went back to drinking, right? I knew what the outcome was going to look like, jails, institutions, everything. And I still picked up. So now they're saying all of a sudden that hot flame's there and I'm recoiling naturally, automatically. I don't even have to think about it, right? And that was my experience, right? I acted sanely, normally, right? Automatically, right? Because God was directing the show. I wasn't trying to white knuckle it. That did not work for me at all, right? I needed to be restored to sanity. That was the only way that this alcoholic was going to make it. White knuckling and me, it didn't last. I was drinking against my will. So we'll see our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, just like we've ceased fighting everything and anyone. Neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. One of my favorite lines from this promise, because, you know, I've also, you know, after going through the steps for alcohol, you know, I went through the steps for food and I went through the steps for chaos creating and I've got through all the steps and had all of these experiences. But when I think of, like, just because I'm not drinking, right, doesn't mean I'm sane. But when I am sane, like the goal, right, when I wake up, when I pray every morning, when I get centered, when I like just talk to God, right, in the morning, this is what I'm asking for help with. I want to be in this position of neutrality. That's my goal, right? And as you can probably tell, you've seen me a few times, I'm a very excited person. Don't get me wrong, enthusiasm is wonderful, but right-sized. I can't right-size myself on my own power, right? Neutrality is where God is, right? God's not up here. He's not down here. He's in the neutral. So that has to be my goal, right? Is to stay with God in the neutrality. And when I'm there, He keeps me safe and protected. When I'm neutral, that's when I can go anywhere, do anything, right? And He is keeping me sane no matter where I go. Because like I said, I can't white knuckle this stuff. It doesn't work for me. That's why I really don't have a choice, but I have to practice this program. And if I don't, I'll either drink or I'll want to die sober. And that's what happened to me when I didn't do an effective job practicing this program. So it says we've not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed, right? It doesn't exist. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react, right? We react sanely as long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. And what does that look like? Keep close to God and perform His work well, just like they tell us in the third step. Over to you.
All right, I'll talk fast so we could catch at least another paragraph in this. But here's, these promises are really important because they only can happen as a result of the work of the steps prior to it. See, the ninth step promises can come true when I'm drinking and using. Fear slips away. I know a new peace. It's diluted, but I get these temporary promises. I can do stuff that I couldn't do on my own with some mood or mind altering substance or alcohol. But these promises cannot happen as a result of a substance. And, you know, Danielle said we cease fighting anything or anyone. The reason why we cease fighting them is because love and tolerance is our code. I don't need to fight with you anymore, right? And the sanity is really powerful because when you're placed into this position of sanity, you wouldn't pick up even if you could. See, if you take most of the people, probably everyone on the Brady Bunch screen, and if I said, you know what? What's today? Today is the 10th or something, maybe? Hold on. Is today the 10th? The 11th, right? How about if everybody on this screen right now, let's go reset our sobriety dates, right? April 11th, 2022, you'd say, are you crazy? Because you're in some position of neutrality. You're safe and protected. There's some sanity. You wouldn't do it. Everybody could pick up right now. You can, but you wouldn't, even if you could. You know, and that's how we get placed when we have a sane mind. We don't have alcoholic thinking anymore. And it's really important to always remember that, you know, that's what sanity looks like, that I wouldn't do it even if I could. And at the end of the paragraph, it's really important. It says fit spiritual condition. Probably the most overlooked term that I know in this book, because I know a lot of people that are a cheeseburger away from a heart attack, and they look in the mirror and they still think they're 18 years old and playing high school football or something, you know? So we could delude ourselves to what we can do as adults. You know, if you're a fit athlete, you train. You're not going out like and waking up tomorrow and going to run, you know, a double marathon or a triathlon. You train for it. You get fit. You're in fit condition. And it's the same thing spiritually. Can't dilute yourself because just because you once had an experience, you're always going to have an experience. It's important. And that's why constantly doing this stuff, constantly being involved in the process, not just reading the book, but being the book, being the principles in the book, sharing it, you know, taking people into the book, using the book as a tool, not a weapon. That's how we remain fit. And if you're not sure, if you want a barometer, whether you're in fit spiritual condition, go to page 52 and read the bedevilments. And if you're experiencing multiple bedevilments, you may not be as fit as you think spiritually, because those are the barometer of what my life looks like when my spiritual condition is slipping. So if there's fear in my life, if I'm having trouble with people around me, if I'm, you know, if I can't control my emotional natures, not my emotions, it's easy to tell me to walk into a room and pretend I'm happy, but what's inside is I'm want to just tell you I'm not happy. That's the nature of it. And, you know, I'm discontent, I'm restless. That's how you could tell if you're in fit condition spiritually or not. It's an internal job and it's something you could see for yourself. So try and hopefully we can get to this last paragraph or two.
Thanks, Ian. Okay, continuing on page 85. It is easy to lit up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are the thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. Danielle?
All right, I'll be quick, I promise, on this one. All right, so it's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action. Oh, don't I know it. And you know, it's so easy. Okay. I'm busy. I got a son. I got this, I got that going on. I push all this stuff to the side. Right. And the truth is they'll say that anything you put before AA, you lose. And that's not true in my book. My good mentor here has taught me something that's very, very true, which is that it's anything I put before God, I lose. And I have to work this program. I have to get up. I have to pray. I have to meditate because my life depends on it. My sanity depends on it. It's not even about drinking anymore. I don't want to be miserable. I've had a taste of that serenity, that contentment, and I don't want to be miserable anymore. I can't. And I will do whatever it takes. And that's how I ended up getting to this place where I started doing the steps on a much more frequent basis, because that's what I needed in order to keep this contentment. And then each experience grew with that, right? And then I was able to learn how to practice these disciplines more effectively, right? And learned how to live the book, not just read the book. Or I'll end up, you know, just not wanting to live anymore and in deep depression. And I've done it. So why don't I just make it easy on myself and do what I gotta do from the beginning? It's a whole lot easier to do that than having to backtrack and get unblocked, regain access, go through all of this stuff again. Just stay current. Keep the channel clear, right? I have access to God by the time I've done all this work, right? Now it's my responsibility as a sober woman to live everything that I just learned, right? And practice these disciplines. And it says we are headed for trouble. If we do, alcohol is a subtle foe, because you know what? I don't pick up a drink one day. I start acting out, and then it's a matter of time before my misery leads me back to the drink, right? This isn't just like one day, oh, I didn't see that coming. No, that's not what happens, right? I start acting out. I start getting into fear. I stop doing the things that I know keep me connected to my higher power. And because I think I have power again, I forget, right? Because my whole life I was told, you should have power, Danielle. Work as hard as you can. You can accomplish anything, like except alcoholism. Anyway, so it says we're not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve, contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. And that's what I need to do. I have to do this day in and day out. That means 10, 11, 12, all the time. I need to be working with people all the time. I need to be of service to people all the time, not just in AA. This is the way I have, this is the way I live my life today. I get to live it today, right? I get to be helpful. I get to bring value, bring something to other people, as opposed to just sucking everybody dry, which is the only thing I was capable of doing when I was drinking, right? But I do need to do it, and I do need to maintain these and do these things every single day in order to keep it. And I'll let Ian talk about what reprieve means, because I know he loves that. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. It's not about me anymore. That's what a spiritual experience is. It's a shift. It's going from self-centered to God-centered. My life is not about me anymore. God puts people, experiences, situations in my path for me to learn, for me to help people, for me to grow, right? And I may not always know why. But today I can say I trust. Usually he knows what he's doing. Sometimes I beg to differ, but you know, it's part of the process, right? But I need to carry God's vision into my activities. How can I best serve thee? So I start my day and say, God, how can I serve your children? How can I help your children? Who should I call? I ask all these things in meditation, and you know, that's what they say in the 11th step, like the intuitive thought becomes a working part of the mind. What comes to me today is not just sporadic, right? It is God directing me, right? Because I have access to the power. And these thoughts, which must go with us constantly, we can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. So all of a sudden, when I'm sane, I can use my will, but I need to use it with God. God allows me to use my will in a sane, right-sized way, right? Which I am not capable of doing on my own power. I'm only capable doing it with his help, which is why it's so important that I have to do this step and constantly be walking with God through my day. That's when I have success. When God is holding my hand, going through everything, I'm talking, I'm interacting, and it's just, it deepens this relationship that I'm developing. And then I can trust and rely a whole lot easier because I see God working day in and day out all the time in my life. You're up.
Okay, I'm going to say something real quick, and then we probably won't get the last paragraph. We'll end here. There's two things I like to say in this paragraph. When I rest on my laurels, I'm sitting on my accomplishments. You know, I'm taking responsibility for my recovery over God. You know, I've got this achievement. More people go out of the rooms on resting on their laurels than anything else. They hide it behind, didn't go to meetings. Well, people didn't go to meetings for 2 years in COVID, you know? And so they may have Zoomed them. Okay, here's something else that's really important. Daniel kind of hinted at it. But first, alcohol is really not a subtle foe. There's a few things in this book, personally, I kind of, you know, when the book was written and says at the end, it's meant to be suggestive only, that God's going to disclose more to you and to us. Alcohol doesn't come out of the ground into my mouth and start drinking. The subtle foe is the spiritual malady, which makes me think it's okay to pick up a drink. Sanity goes back to insanity, and that's the foe right there. And I just want you to picture this for a second, because this is what Danielle said earlier about maintenance. They're not maintenance, they're growth steps. Just close your eyes for a second and picture yourself climbing an icy mountain, right? And you're 3/4 of the way up. In order to maintain that position, can you stop and stand still? No, we have to continue to climb, because we will slide down that icy mountain faster than we got up there, way faster. So the maintenance is part of the growth. In order to maintain my condition, I have to keep fit. In order to maintain a marathon runner, they train. In order to maintain anything, I have to continue to do it. And you know, the last thing I'm going to say is, which is really powerful right here, this is the concept we get in the third step, where it says this concept's the keystone of the new triumphant arch which we walk through freedom, that these thoughts go with me constantly. The vision of God's will, the concept, the vision, the concepts, what we see in the future, this vision that I'm walking hand in hand with God on this path, equal, shoulder to shoulder, and my life's being guided with him. So I want to thank you guys for allowing me to be part of this and asking my better half to lead. I'm an alcoholic.
Wow. Let's give a hand real quick. All right. We're going to pass the seventh tradition basket. You can also sign up for email at our website, simpleactions.net. This is the PayPal link. Credit cards and debit cards are okay. We also have Venmo. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Are there any AA and related announcements?
I've got a quick one. Alcoholic David.
David.
Share my screen. This group, Simple Actions Group, currently meeting over Zoom, as you can all see. On May 9th, we are planning on going back in person. In true alcoholic fashion, we're going to have a party to do that. So we got a 6 p.m. potluck supper and a 7 p.m. speaker meeting. We got Chris W., past delegate from Virginia. She's going to come and tell her story. It's going to be at Ghent United Methodist Church, not the normal place we meet when we're meeting in person. So there's the flyer. It's available on simpleactions.net as well as tidewaterintergroup.org. And we do plan to stay on Zoom as well. That meeting will be broadcast in real time. Probably not the potluck. but anyway, May 9th, mark your calendar. All are welcome. Thank you.
Thanks, David. Do we have any other announcements? Okay. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. All home group members, please raise your hands. Okay. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us. All right. I want to thank everyone, especially our speakers, Danielle and Ian. Thanks for all who participated. And then Rick is going to read the last three paragraphs on page 164. Rick.
I'm waiting to, are you going to pop them up or just for the book?
Yeah, Morgan's getting it. Just okay. A second.
You want me just to read it?
That would be great. Thank you.
Okay. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you could do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Amen.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to, you can unmute yourselves and we're going to say the Lord's Prayer together if you would like. And I'll give everyone a chance to say thank you to Ian and Danielle. And thanks to Morgan for co-hosting. So let's say the Lord's Prayer for those who would like to. Our Father,
Amen.
Woo!
Woohoo! That was awesome.
We're on the fire tonight.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks for a great
meeting. Thank you both. That was wonderful.
Thanks, Ian. Thanks, Danielle.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Diane, Danielle, Ian. Very good. I enjoyed this meeting.
Good. I'm glad you're here, Bobby.
Glad you're here.
Okay.
Welcome, Alex.
Next week.
Welcome, Alex.
Thanks, everyone.
Glad you're here, brother.
Thank you. Glad you're here. Don't leave us.
Please call.
Yes, please do. Sorry about this.